This is the Wednesday Morning Zine. I'm Tom Yoder. At the beginning of the year, Montezuma Cortez RE1 schools were informed that they did not meet Colorado Department of Education performance standards, receiving an accreditation score of 43.7%. As a result, the district has submitted a priority improvement plan to the state that will outline how Cortez schools will be able to meet Colorado requirements for academic performance. The plan includes a focus on standardized, research-based instruction models, building a climate and culture for student success, and utilizing effective, data-driven instruction techniques. With me here this morning to talk about the plan is Alex Carter. He's the superintendent for Montezuma Cortez RE1 School District. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Tom.
Let's back up just a little bit to start off. Can we talk a little bit first about how the school district got itself into this situation and why you're here now?
Yeah, sure. So you know, one of the things we like to do is really talk plain about our performance and our data. And frankly, the students of Montezuma Cortez as an aggregate, so it says as an average, haven't performed where the state would like us to perform and hasn't for years and years. If we looked all the way back to 2007, 2008, 2009 data, the data's remained pretty consistent. And that's the reason that the state legislature brought forth SB 163, which was is called the Schools Accountability Act, saying we need to put some leverage at the state level so we can make school districts and schools who are underperforming change their practice so they'll get better. And quite frankly, although everyone's working really hard in the district, our performance hasn't changed drastically. So we're in year four of priority improvement. So that's definitely our biggest goal right now, is to change student achievement so that our students are performing at better levels and learning better. And as an outcome of that, we'll get off of this priority improvement plan.
All right, so let's talk now about what is involved with the priority improvement plan. Can you describe what's in that plan?
It's a long document. It's over 60 pages long. It's full of data. I've been criticized. It's full of jargon. And sometimes I laugh. I say, well, jargon is another way of saying professional language. It is a professional document. It's really to guide the educators of our district, our professionals, on what are the strategies we're using to move out of priority improvement and towards full accredited status. But at the same time, we do need to get out and communicate our plan to the lay people, to the community, and say that this is how we're doing it. And we need to do it as unjargony as possible. So we have produced a kind of a one-page plan on a page saying, here are the main strategies that we're using. And that's what I'm happy to come here and talk about today.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about that, but can you tell me a little bit about how this plan was formed? Is this something that you already kind of had in mind before this situation came up and you just said, okay, we got to pull the trigger on this now, or what happened around that?
Right. Well, the most important thing is that this isn't a brand new plan for this year. We're not trying to reinvent how we're going to get out of this kind of priority improvement plan status every year. So a lot of the things that are in this plan have been in the plan, have been in the works. I said this to someone the other day, you know, when you're trying to change educational performance, it's not like painting a room. It's not like, okay, you know what? This room is drab. Let's go buy a pot of paint. We're going to paint for a day. And at the end of the day, we're going to go, there, now it looks great. It's done. We've changed this room. Changing educational performance is it's a marathon, not a sprint. So you can't keep changing your strategies every year. So one of the strategies that is in this plan that is embedded throughout it is a real commitment to getting our teachers the ability to work together collaboratively to plan great instructional units for kids. So we don't have what we would call foxhole teaching going on in the district, where one third grade teacher is doing a really great job teaching reading, but they don't do so great at math instruction. And then in the next classroom, you might have a really great science unit, but reading isn't stressed. We want to get all of our third grade teachers together to understand what are the goals and standards that we have to get our students to be able to master, so that they'll all move on to fourth grade and be successful. And then they'll move on to fifth grade and be successful. And a lot of times we're seeing good growth in those cohorts. It's not good enough growth to move a kid from, let's say, partially proficient into proficient. They're moving positively within the category that would be called partially proficient. So they might be low partially proficient, one year, and the next year we kind of throw up our hands and say, oh, they're still partially proficient, but now they're high partially proficient. So the goal is to keep with a strategy, keep using the techniques that we know are working, so that when eventually we're going to start seeing these kids pop into that next category up. And we're already seeing that in certain areas. But, you know, this commitment to professional learning communities and collaboration, really, we're just in our 18th month of it. Mm-hmm. So we started it last year. We're continuing with it. That's the early release Wednesdays. That's what the teachers do for those 90 minutes. And they're starting to really create good effect.
If you're just tuning in, this is the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. This morning, my guest is Alex Carter. He's the superintendent for Montezuma Cortez RE1 School District. We're talking about a priority improvement plan that they've formulated to improve academic performance in the schools. So let's talk a little bit more about the plan. In the least amount of jargon that you can put out there, tell me a little bit more about what this plan includes.
Okay. Really, we have three major areas that we're focusing on. The first one is we call it culture and climate for student success. It sounds a little jargony to me. What we're talking about here is we have to, as a school district, recommit to forming great relationships with everyone in the school community. That means that I need to do a better job working with my principals and our teachers to make sure that we trust each other, that we know that we all have common goals and our mission is really tight, that we need to work with our parent communities and really involve, do everything we can to increase parental engagement in the school process. We know we can't fix this alone as a school district. It is a whole community engagement. We need to work with our non-school community. So those people that don't have kids in the schools and work with them to say, how can we build a relationship with the schools? Because let's face it, we need to go to the whole community sometimes and have asks like we did in 2012. Mm-hmm. Hey, we really need buildings. Our newest building was built in 1967. Can we build a new high school? And the community came overwhelmingly and said, yes, build a new high school. And we're doing that. So we know that it all starts with the relationships that we're building inside our community, inside our schools. Without relationships, anything else we do is really pointless. The second thing that we're really focusing on is making sure that what we're teaching our students and how we're teaching our students are supported by past people that have done it to success. So we're looking at research-based strategies. What's the best reading program that we can use to help our students develop reading, their reading skills over time? It's not, some teachers are like, hey, I think that I used to do this neat trick over here that worked well. It's not about what's going on in 1 year's class. It's about a program. When the students come to us in kindergarten, are they going to be reading at grade level by third grade? So we're really, really embedding this program. It's called Success for All. And we're starting to see great data coming back. We just met with the Success for All team who came here. And we have 112 kids in our elementary schools who weren't reading at grade level last year who are reading at grade level now. That's a 10% increase in on grade level reading. That is one of those early indicators of success that we're really excited about. So, and we're also doing some practices that we know are working. Some good data that we just got. The state just released the 2013 graduation rates for Montezuma County. Montezuma Cortez RE1 has a 52.5% graduation rate. That's bad. But Montezuma Cortez High School, which is in the district, has a 70.9% graduation rate. That's up 6% over last year. And it's the highest graduation rate we've had in 5 years. And that's testament to the hard work of the teachers, counselors, and administrators at MCHS who are really focused on, we want to target each and every student and say, what can we do to help this student get across the finish line? How can we get them to graduation? And it was very targeted, very student-centered. And when I was part of one of those meetings last year, I leaned over to one of the counselors. I said, hey, when did this meeting, or how was this meeting last year? How was this different? And she said, Alex, this meeting just didn't happen. It hasn't happened in the past. We weren't focused on the kids that were struggling and really at risk of not graduating and saying early, like in September, what can we do now to make sure that in May they're going to be walking across the stage? And that worked. I mean, 6% more, that's 9 kids. And 9 kids might not sound like a lot, but to me, that's 9 kids that graduated from high school that wouldn't have the year before. That's really neat. And then so that's our kind of our instructional model, really focusing on, are we doing what works? And then the last thing is, how do we know if it's working or not? And that's the data-driven instructional model. It's we need to know short term in a timely fashion. I need to know, did my students achieve the goals that I was trying to teach this week? I need to know this week so that if they did, I can move on. And if they didn't, I can plan to remediate and do something different next week than I'd already planned. So we're really focusing on these three strategies: building great relationships, looking at what's worked elsewhere and implementing those things here, and giving teachers the tools they need to know if it's working or not and to make quick adaptations. Where in the past, we kind of waited till the end of the year and said, geez, we hope we did better this year. We need to know now, are we doing better, and adjust accordingly.
This is the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder, and this morning I'm talking with Alex Carter, the superintendent for Montezuma Cortez RE1 School District, about a priority improvement plan that they're putting into place to improve academic performance across the district. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. We're back here on the Wednesday Morning Zine on KSJD. I'm Tom Yoder. This morning, my guest is Alex Carter. He's the superintendent for Montezuma Cortez RE1 School District, and we're talking about their priority improvement plan that is in place. Alex, let's talk a little bit about your keys to success. How are you gonna move forward and measure that?
Right. So we're really focused on. So we have this great plan to move forward. How are we gonna do it? What are we gonna leverage in order to make a difference in kids' educational program? The one thing that we have in Cortez that we have the same as everyone else. There, no one has an advantage over us is time. Right. I mean, as far as I know, the calendar in Cortez has 365, or I guess this year 366 days on it, and that's the same as everywhere else. So we have to look at how we use time here in Cortez, and are we getting enough time with our kids, and are we getting enough time for our teachers to plan for the instruction that they deliver when they're with their kids? So we're really, really studying this spring, looking at our school calendar, looking at how we use the time we have with our teachers and our kids. Can we increase student contact time? Can we give our students more time with teachers? Because we know that, I mean, this whole plan is predicated upon the fact that teachers are doing a great job in the classroom. So if they are, then how are we going to increase success by giving them more time with kids? So we want to really look at time. The second thing is, we want to make sure that when we give teachers collaboration opportunities, the teachers are really able to maximize that opportunity to put the right people together in the room and give really teachers the latitude to focus their instruction during those professional learning communities. And finally, you know, every 2 weeks or so, there's a letter to the editor, and I get kicked in the teeth. But you know what? I learn something from every single one of those letters, because fundamentally what those people are writing is, hey, we want to see the schools get better too. So we're all trying. We all want the same thing. And one of the letters recently talked about the way that this UIP, this Unified Improvement Plan, was full of jargon. And basically what I read there is, Alex, you're not communicating very well. You need to get out there and you need to let people know we are trying really hard every day, and we want these students to get better. It's not a game for us. This is real. And there's a lot of people in the school district that are committed to it, and we've got a plan. I mean, a lot of people just want to hear, what's the plan? And that's why we're excited to have opportunities like this to come on KSJD and share where we're going with this district. And so it's really like those keys are use of time really well, getting teachers working together in collaboration, and then communicating better between the school and the community and the parents in the schools, so that we really know where we're going. We're all pulling in the same direction.
Alex, how is funding figuring into this situation? It has to play a role, right?
It is. I was in a meeting with the Colorado Department of Education last week, and we were talking about the achievement gap between white students and minority students. And it was a 3-hour meeting, and it was a rich meeting. We were talking about all kinds of different things we're doing in order to really address this gap and what's working, what's not getting traction. And at the end of the meeting, it broke up, and it was in Denver. So all the other superintendents that are in the front range, they got in their cars and drove back in, but I was stuck in Denver. So I kind of hung out after the meeting, and we're talking with some of the people. I said, you know what's amazing? We talked for 3 hours about what we can do with our kids, and no one talked about funding inequities. I mean, we're in Cortez. We get $6,300 per student per year. to educate. And then 65 miles away in Telluride, they get $9,800 per student. And the New York Times last month, they wrote an article and it compared 33 first world countries. And it said in 30 of those countries, students of poverty get as much or more, mostly more, but as much or more funding so that there is a change so that they can move out of poverty. Because we know that coming out of poverty, the linchpin or the tipping point is educational opportunities. So they said students in poverty need more money to have more opportunities to move out of poverty. So in 30 of 33 first world countries, there's more money for poor kids than there are for rich kids, except in the United States, Israel, and Turkey.
Wow.
And I just want to say, shouldn't we consider as a country and as a state, maybe we should be with the 30 rather than with the other two, that maybe those 30 have it figured out. And every year we read, hey, Finland is doing great. South Korea is doing great. Singapore is doing great. And I look and I go, well, yeah, their students, our rich kids, they're doing fine. That's true in Cortez. That's true in Telluride. Our rich kids are doing well. We're competitive. It's our poor kids. It's an aggregate, so it's an average. So when you average poor kids and with rich kids, poor kids aren't doing as well. Why not? They're not given the opportunities they need to do well. So we need to get real, and that means really focusing on state funding. This state went to the ballot box, and I'm not talking about Amendment 66. I'm talking back in 2003, Amendment 23, and said, we want more funding for education. And they passed it overwhelmingly. And then in 2008, the legislature created something called the negative factor. That was a way that we can fund education and then defund it. It's at the tune of $1 billion right now. The state legislature, through Amendment 23, has to fund education, but then they defund it through this negative factor. And they get this. We have a $1.2 billion surplus this year in Colorado. They increased the negative factor by 0.08. In Cortez, that was $200,000 less money in this year's budget. And we need to put some pressure on our state legislatures to say, hey, we voted in Amendment 23 to fund education. You guys now have to fund education and stop defunding it. And secondly, we have to ask ourselves locally, are we going to, we can't count on the state to fund our kids' education and our kids are struggling, can we fund education better locally through something, a local revenue source? And so we're looking at all these opportunities. I really feel like, I use this one analogy, and this is how I'm going to finish with you, Tom. But if you live on a 2-lane road and there's lots of traffic and the community decides, hey, we need to build that to a 4-lane road, they build it, they put the money into it, they build it, and it speeds up traffic. In education, sometimes I talk to people, I say, we need more money. And they say, that's just an excuse, Alex. I'm like, it's not. In everything else, you understand you have to fund something in order to see improvement. And I need more funds in order to have more teachers to teach better reading or to extend the school year or to have better school security or to have more technology in schools. That all costs money. I can't wish that stuff to happen. So I do wish it happens, but it's not happening. So I need money to make it happen. So revenue and funding is a big issue in schools today.
Absolutely. Alex, if folks want to learn more or if they have questions, where do they go?
You know, that's a great, so we have this nifty trifold that I really do feel like sums up a lot of what I said today and kind of expands upon it, gives some examples of the programs we're doing and some of the initiatives that we're undertaking. And that's available at the district office. We're also putting it, digitizing it and putting it on the website. Also, we're having a series of meetings, especially at the three elementary schools who are in priority improvement or turnaround, to talk about what's the plan to move forward. I encourage parents and community members to reach out to me directly. My number's in the book, but I'll give it to you right now. It's 565-7282 extension 1115. That rings on my desk. Call me up or send me an email, acarter@cortez.k12.co.us, or hey, write a letter to the editor and just chew me out in public. Whatever it takes. Why I want to increase communication, because really that's the goal.
All right. Alex, thanks so much for coming in, and thanks for all your hard work in the school district.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Superintendent for Montezuma Cortez RE1 School District, Alex Carter. You've been listening to the Wednesday Morning Zine. Today's program was produced by myself, Tom Yoder, and our theme music was written and performed by Brett Peja.